Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, July 21st. I'm Taylor Heckert. Alaska U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski announced last week that her bill allowing five Alaska Native communities in Southeast Alaska to receive land entitlements passed out of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. The legislation, called the Alaska Native Landless Equity Act, would allow Petersburg, Wrangell, Haines, Ketchikan, and Tenneke to form Alaska Native corporations and each receive about 23,000 acres of federal land. Those communities were excluded from the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA, when it became law over 50 years ago. ANCSA transferred 44 million acres of land to more than 200 regional, village, and urban corporations to resolve land claims throughout Alaska. The landless movement is not without controversy. ANCSA mandated the newly recognized Native corporations to make a profit. Because of this, some who oppose Murkowski's bill argue that it would privatize 115,000 acres of land in the Tongass National Forest. Murkowski spoke directly to the opposition in her committee remarks Thursday. She addressed concerns about environmental conservation, but said that, quote, this should not be the controversial measure it has historically been viewed as.
There are no better stewards of our Alaska lands than the people who have lived on them for thousands of years.
The Alaska delegation has been introducing landless legislation since the early 90s without success. In 2023, a landless bill introduced by Murkowski cleared the U.S. Senate committee for the first time. Murkowski also noted during remarks that Alaska Congressman Nick Begich's companion measure passed in the House of Representatives last month with no recorded opposition. Begich's bill is the first landless bill to clear the House.
And I think there's good reason for that, because it comes back to the inequity that we have seen and an effort to do right by the Alaska Native peoples who were excluded so many decades ago.
Murkowski's legislation now heads to the Senate floor for consideration. Wrangell is moving forward with plans to build a massive shipyard that could repair state ferries, federal Coast Guard ships, and research and military vessels as well. But as Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the project would be costly.
Wrangell already has a busy marine service center that hauls out large commercial vessels locally and from nearby communities. This proposed shipyard would service much larger ships, up to 400 and 500 feet long, with a lift capacity of about 38,000 tons. But the price tag is a bit shocking. Between $605 and $726 million. The borough has a $50 million grant pending with the Federal Economic Development Administration.
So obviously $605 on the low end is a staggering figure. You could probably buy Wrangell Island for $605 million.
Mason Villarma is Wrangell's borough manager. He admits the cost is enormous, but he says developers are approaching it in steps.
Phasing the project into digestible chunks.
Villarma was speaking at a recent town hall with several project partners. Wrangell's shipyard would be built on an existing deep water port, a former mill site that the borough purchased for $2.5 million. It's located 6 miles south of town. Villarma says there was overwhelming community input on the site's potential uses.
We don't want cruise ships out there. We want to see maritime industrial activity. We want this to be an industrial complex with blue-collar jobs, trades-based, and that's really what we focused on.
The shipyard is estimated to employ up to 500 people at full capacity, which would significantly change the town's economic landscape, as Wrangell only has a few thousand residents. For decades, many residents worked in the timber industry until the town's main sawmills started closing in the 90s. The shipyard's operator, JAG, runs shipyards in Ketchikan and Seward, but is based in Michigan. Charles Minton with the company says the political climate is right for industrial development.
We want to make sure that the works phase in Alaska is completed in Alaska and we service the vessels and the assets. They're going to be positioned here not only from a commercial perspective to help maintain commerce, but also from the defensive posture.
Earlier this year, Wrangell borough leaders visited a shipyard in Florida, which project designer Pearlson & Pearlson worked on. Luke Pitts with the company says they'll design Wrangell Shipyard for maintenance and repair, but it would also accommodate building ships.
We've done several of these projects now and have a good kind of baseline of what things cost. We've also reached out to general contractors that have worked in Alaska in the recent past to kind of back our estimates.
The partners say the infrastructure needed for the project is there for power, water and sewer, and fuel. It will take a few years to secure more than a dozen required permits. So the project, in theory, could start construction in 2 years and take about 3 years after that. But first, hundreds of millions of dollars will need to be found. Reporting for Coast Alaska, in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
A woman is safe after she lost strength while swimming in the water near Mill Street in downtown Ketchikan, according to the Ketchikan Fire Department. First responders were alerted to the incident Sunday evening after a witness went to the fire station just a few hundred feet from where the woman was swimming. Firefighters, paramedics, and several bystanders helped pull 30-year-old Ketchikan resident Amanda Perry out of the water. Perry was transported to Ketchikan Medical Center for evaluation and treatment of hypothermia and has since been released. In a Facebook message to KRBD, Perry said that she is grateful to the community of Ketchikan for helping her in a time of need. She said that type 1 diabetes is no joke and said it's important to eat before doing anything physical. She said her blood sugar dropped while swimming. The fire department reminds people that even in the summer, Southeast Alaska's water temperatures can be dangerously cold, which could lead to cold shock or hypothermia. If you're spending time on or near the water, the fire department recommends wearing a properly fitted life jacket. You should also avoid going alone. If you see someone in distress, call 911. If possible, throw them a flotation device. Juneau's downtown City Hall building will be up for sale soon. One interested buyer is its neighbor, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. As KTOO's Clarice Larson reports, the Alaska Native nonprofit says it has big aspirations for the site.
The city and borough of Juneau is looking to sell its City Hall building downtown as it moves its staff to the Michael J. Burns building in the near future. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, whose mission is to uplift Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures of Southeast Alaska, says it's interested in buying it. The nonprofit wants to tear down City Hall and build something new. Here's its chief operating officer, Lee Kadinger.
The building is 75 years old and has, in addition to over $12 million of deferred maintenance, has asbestos contamination, lead paint contamination issues.
Kadinger says a new building would focus on expanding SHI's arts campus downtown.
We're looking to construct a facility that would add a glass studio space to Juneau and build upon our Northwest Coast Arts Capital vision.
Kadinger says the new facility would focus on cultural tourism programming. It would give visitors hands-on training in Northwest Coast arts and include a glass studio, where Tlingit glass artist Preston Singletary would train people on how to work with glass.
A glass studio space is something that we've always kind of looked at, and it's always been a priority for us, as we know the benefits it would bring not only to artists, as well as the community members and visitors alike.
SHI estimates the new facility could cost up to $40 million to construct, but would bring in both revenue and jobs to downtown. It would match the nonprofit's other neighboring facilities, including the Walter Soboloff Building, its arts campus, and Indigenous Science Building. Kadinger says the idea to build a new facility at the site has been in the works since the city began openly discussing moving to a new City Hall location a few years back. Recently, SHI says it altered its design to offer the city the opportunity to relocate the Juneau Douglas City Museum to the second floor of the new building. At a committee meeting on Monday, Assemblymember Christine Wall says she supports negotiating a deal with SHI.
We have a proposal in front of us from someone we know can deliver year-round use at a value that is close to what we think market value to be, and an option to, you know, also explore potential solutions for City Museum as well.
The City Hall move is estimated to cost at least $20 million. The sale would help recoup some of the costs of moving to the new location. Right now, the Assembly wants to sell the City Hall building for a minimum of $2.5 million. But SHI has only offered $1.5 million for it. On Monday, the Assembly discussed two options for City Hall. One ordinance that would put the building up for sale at a minimum $2.5 million bid, and another that would allow the city to negotiate the sale directly with SHI. The Assembly will take public testimony at a future meeting and then decide which ordinance to ultimately move forward with. Assemblymember Maureen Hall says she favors selling the building for potentially less money to a community-minded entity, such as SHI, over a company with deeper pockets.
I think by putting it out to the highest bid, we have the risk of a big company with really deep pockets swooping in and snatching it up, and then where would we be?
But Mary Beth Weldon says she'd rather put it up for bid. Meanwhile, City Manager Katie Kester says the move to the new City Hall location will take longer than expected, which will likely drive up costs. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Banana peels, eggshells, and coffee grounds are some of the scraps you might toss into a composting bin. But there's something else you can throw in the mix. KCAW's Lauren Salemo attended a biochar workshop in Sitka to learn how scorched sticks can help your garden and the atmosphere.
Seven Sitkins are taking turns chucking wood scraps into a round metal pit. They're hauling them from Darren McAvoy's truck bed, where twigs, branches, and logs tower high over the cabin of his pickup truck.
We don't need million-dollar high-tech machines to do this really important process of carbon storage. It's available to anybody in the home, farm, ranch, backyard.
Or in the outfield of Mount Edgecombe High School's old ballpark. McAvoy, a professor at Utah State University, is in Sitka leading a workshop on how to make biochar. That's charcoal that stores carbon and improves soil quality.
If worldwide, in the next 30 years, all agriculture adopted this approach, we'd have more carbon in our soil than we ever put in our air for the entire Industrial Revolution.
Waste wood is often openly burned or left to rot. Both of these scenarios emit 100% of the wood's carbon. If turned into biochar, McAvoy says only a third goes back into the atmosphere. The rest is stored as a solid of almost pure carbon. To make biochar, you need large pieces of waste wood and a kiln. McAvoy's kiln is a simple machine, just two rings of metal kept together by thumb screws. It comes up to his ribs and is about the size of a hot tub.
Let's start a fire.
The bottom is packed with sand to keep air from seeping in. Using a lighter, he ignites small bundles of kindling on top of the spruce and birch branches. Both of these steps are crucial to deprive the kiln of oxygen.
Pretty soon, a flame cap forms over the top of it, and it consumes all the smoke, all the combustibles coming up, so it's very clean burning.
Thick smoke and ash billow from the damp wood, now roaring with flames.
It's more productive and easier and less smoky if the wood is a little bit dry, which is not so easy in Sitka.
The wood needs to burn for about an hour. That means there's time for lunch.
Okay, so I have hand sanitizer, I have foil, I have bean and cheese and beef and bean burritos. I recommend you grab one and some foil and wrap it up and put it on the top edge of the kiln. Hope your expectations for a good lunch weren't too high. Mine's warm.
The pile that once poked out above the kiln's walls has shrunk. Small pieces of dark, black charcoal litter the bottom. The next step requires perfect timing.
Like when you're sitting around a campfire late at night and you're kind of falling asleep and it poofs out and it's just coals.
That's when it's time to quench the burning wood. McAvoy douses the kiln with a garden hose. This stops the biochar from turning to ash. He knows it's cool enough when he can run his bare hand through the char. McAvoy says biochar is like a sponge that soaks up compost nutrients when mixed together. And there's another upside, according to Andrea Fraga, a gardening teacher at Pacific High School.
As I get older, my back gets sore. I think about not turning compost piles. And so if you don't have to turn them as much, if they're full of biochar, that's great.
For drier climates, the char holds onto water and keeps soils moist. Biochar also has its benefits for wetter regions like Southeast Alaska.
It's known to hold the nutrients on site and help to prevent the leaching that the heavy rainfall here creates.
Though it's not widely used, McAvoy hopes his demonstrations across the country will educate and inspire more people to try it out.
Does anybody want to bring some home?
Yeah, I'd like to take some up.
He scrapes up a few handfuls of char and plops it into garbage bags to send home with gardeners. McAvoy hopes his workshop plants a seed for what will grow into a more common practice. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Lauren Salemo.
For KFSK, I'm Taylor Heckert.